Stimulation for your brain. This is the Lisa Wexler Show on WICC 600.
Georgia, a song of you. Comes as sweet and clear as moonlight through the pines.
Martha Zala from WDUN, who was calling us from the South. And I don't know, Martha, did I miss peach season? Are we in the throes of peach season now? And I know it's also South Carolina.
We are, and you know, it's so funny. We are in the throes of peach season, and we are the peach state, but actually for a number of years, South Carolina has been the number one peach producer because of, you know, changing weather and that kind of thing. So we don't say that too much down here, but it is. We're the number one blueberry producer in the world now.
Are you?
The blueberry state
really?
Doesn't sound as good. Yes, yes.
I thought it was Maine, you see, because we've got this old children's book about, you know, picking Sal for blueberries in Maine, and Maine and blueberries always went in my head. I didn't realize.
Yeah, well, Maine does go together with blueberries, but Georgia's now the number one producer of blueberries. So, you know, it moves around, right? It moves around.
Well, either way, it's fruit season. That's the main thing for me, because I love summer fruits. Martha Zala, welcome back to the show. So I'm looking at the stats here. And according to one of your Georgia local news sites, it says, according to the latest data from the Georgia Department of Public Health as of July 12th, so yesterday, Sunday, the state continues to see a sharp rise in new cases each day, averaging close to 3.5 times as many as the peak average in April. So that's not good. So how are you doing down there?
Well, it's not good, but you also have to look at the death rates. I mean, our death rate was up at around 5.5% in April, and it's down to 2.5% now. What we're seeing is that while hospitalizations are up from what they were a month ago, they're shorter hospitalizations. The patients are younger. They're not as sick. I mean, we're seeing that. But also, you know, Mayor Cuomo, I just think the irony of this, not Mayor Cuomo, but Governor Cuomo is now helping Mayor Bottoms with contact tracing. And it's very interesting because if you take Georgia, California, Texas, Arizona, and Florida and add them up, and New York City had more cases and deaths than all those states put together. So it's you know, you got to look at it with some balance here. But yes, I'm concerned about it. And we did a great story today about a business that has had about 50 cases within their business. It is a trucking business, and this is a company that did everything right. They have heat sensors that check your temperature on the way in. They're letting most people work from home. They're doing everything that they need to do, but they had an asymptomatic spreader that was inside. They've been able to contact trace down to that, and they ended up having 50 cases of COVID. Nobody hospitalized, but 50 cases of COVID.
So this thing still, it's a real spreader. And the question, what I'm hearing you say is you think that the doctors have a better handle on the treatment of the disease. But the truth is that it's a lagging indicator, that if the cases are going up, we really won't know until 3 or 4 weeks from now if that's true.
Yeah, and I think a lot of these cases today are from Memorial Day weekend through that Father's Day period. I think not just in Georgia, but in other places, we started to feel better about how things were going, and people started, you know, taking a few more chances. I mean, I know that whereas my husband's the jail doctor in Hall County, we have had no cases up until the last week. The last week we had two cases that we had to send people home on, and, you know, that sort of thing. So we were for a jail, and we took some proactive things where they weren't arresting people, and they let people that were nonviolent criminals go, that kind of thing. So we did some proactive things, but we haven't seen incidences until recently, like the last week or so, And, you know, my husband, who's the physician there, said, okay, we're going back into triage mode. We're going back as if this is, you know, the worst time. And it's not like they had gotten out of it, but they weren't seeing it. And so they were a little more probably relaxed than they needed to be. So I think that, you know, look, I think you should wear a mask in the appropriate places. I think that you should wash your hands frequently and do social distancing. But understanding that this asymptomatic spread, and this is the thing we're learning about this, is a lot more rampant than we thought it was, but it doesn't seem to make you as sick. And that leads in, I heard your discussion about schools, yeah. Is, you know, Atlanta's going to do all distance learning, but in Hall County, we've got this interesting plan we're going to do where they're going to take the first 15 days of school to first train the teachers, then train the students on what they need to do differently, then bring the parents in to show the students, show them how their children are going to be dealt with. And then give the parents after that the choice on whether they want to do in-person or distance learning.
Well, that's
and I like that idea better than saying, okay, you got to pick now in July what you're going to do in September.
Well, that makes a lot of sense. Do you think, Martha Sally, you're a Republican, do you think that, what do you think about Betsy DeVos? Now, she's our cabinet director of education. Her entire life she has devoted to local, 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 local. That's her whole thing, and that's one of the reasons why she got to be elevated as a cabinet member. She did a complete 180 turnaround, some people say in response to pressure from the White House, to advocate that everybody return to school. What do you think about that? Do you know Betsy?
I don't know her, and I do think that you have to, I do think, as I am a state school board member for my district, and we're grappling with this right now. How much do we do? How far do we go? I mean, everybody is, you know, schools are very much local control in this country, okay?
Right.
That basically different school systems do different things.
Right.
So it's a tough road to hoe, but my biggest concern is that I'm very concerned about what I'm calling the COVID effect on students over the long haul. I mean, how far behind are our kids going to get? How I'm hearing every day, Lisa, about kids that are dealing with depression. And it's not, you know, everybody always wants to go to the 0 to 60, the kids that are being abused, and that is an issue too. But there's also a whole bunch of kids that are in homes where their parents can't stay home. They're
right.
Going to work.
Exactly.
And they're
right.
Home by themselves.
That's
all
right.
The time.
Absolutely. I have to tell you something. I tell you, we're chatting with Martha Sauer of WDUN. I mean, I think distance learning is pretty much a crock, okay? I think it's not going to do the job in most cases, maybe not in all. You know, you've always got some self-starters, some outliers. You even have some people with learning disabilities who do better with the screen than they do with human beings. I understand that. But for the vast majority of children, interaction, peer everything, teacher everything is what it's about. And also the stats are in terms of truancy. We had a large experiment with this last spring because, don't forget, Connecticut shut down before anybody. And up to 25% of people in high school didn't even show up for class, Martha. They didn't even show up for class, not to mention the inner city kids who didn't have access to the computers, who don't have free Wi-Fi at home. I mean, it's terrible.
That's right. Yeah, and I mean, we've invested as a school system in a whole bunch of Wi-Fi hotspots and ways to get get internet to our rural areas in Georgia, which we have some very rural areas. And you know, and the teachers, I'm telling you what, Lisa, the teachers have done things like gathering up packets of work for their students that they know don't have internet and delivering them to their houses, okay? I mean, the teachers have done a lion's amount of work, a lion's share of work above and beyond to try to make sure their kids get what they need during this period of time. But I still think it doesn't replace, you know, Miss Jones, who was my second grade teacher,
that's
who really
right.
believed in me, and
right.
Miss Piper, who was my fifth grade teacher, who really pushed me. You know, it just can't be replaced, you know?
Well, let me ask you this, Martha. Do you think that, because I have been talking about this on the air, and I know it's controversial, and I know some people are, I can hear them yelling at me through the airwaves, but some people agree with me. I think that for some teachers, it's a little bit of a moment in their lifetimes where they may have to decide, is the benefit worth the risk of me going back to school if I'm over the age of 65. By the way, and school systems are going to cry when these teachers leave, because these are some of the best, most experienced members of their staff. They don't want them to go. But the reality with COVID is that it disproportionately affects older people and puts them at risk. So maybe this is the uncomfortable conversation we need to have. What is in the best interests of our children?
Yeah, and I think, too, I mean, in Georgia, most of the teachers are retired before they get into that age group that, you know, that is most highly affected. But I just find it, you know, it's the same problem we're having with law enforcement right now, which is a whole other discussion. But a lot of those older, more experienced police officers are retiring early, you know, because of everything that's going on. I think you're going to see a real sea change and a real shift in the age of what we see out there in a lot of these professions that have been immediately impacted by what's happened with COVID-19.
So if you were advising Governor Kemp, which you are on the State Board of Education, are you telling the governor that mayors and individual superintendents and school districts should have the final say over what happens in their school district?
Oh, yes. I mean, and even in the case with the masks, you know, everybody wanted to portray this fight between the governor and the mayor of Atlanta. That wasn't the case at all. You know, that he has supported from the beginning that cities have the right to do different things that are required related to COVID-19 than the rural areas do. And he's also said, as far as the school system goes, we've got a working group in place right now, because the school system is actually a separate constitutional office where there's a superintendent that's elected. So we have some autonomy to be able to do what we think is best.
Oh,
and I think that, you know, I think that it is important that we look at that, you know what I mean? And we do different things in different places. That's why as soon as I heard about what we were doing with Hall County, I thought, because most of our big school systems, Gwinnett, Cobb, all the counties you've heard, Gwinnett, Cobb, DeKalb, Fulton, the huge counties where they're having the biggest COVID attacks too, they've been wanting parents to make decisions by July 15th, which is tomorrow, on whether they want to be in person or, distance learning.
How can they make that decision?
How can you make that decision? My exact point. I love what Hall County's doing is they're going to go back to school at the normal time. The first 15 days are going to be, you know, here are the times and dates at all different places during the day so working people can go as well as people that are home. Here's how we're going to deal with this. Here's, you can see hands-on how we're going to help you. And then you can make an informed decision on whether you want to take the risk, because this is a risk. It's a risk.
You know, Martha Zala, we're chatting with Martha Zala from WDUN in Georgia. When you step back from all of this, I'm just afraid it's just like another dumbing down of America situation. I'm very concerned. I'm basically an optimist by nature. I'm a very optimistic person, but this is getting to me. This in perpetuity of the children not being able to go to school and do their thing and live and breathe, particularly because this disease is not impacting their age group. It's just not. There are rare outlier instances, but they are very rare, and statistically, they're not enough to shape a decision. If you're making a decision, they're just not. They're outliers. And under 20, this is not like polio, right, where polio hit the kids under 20 and it was a horror and people were frightened. I don't think we closed the schools. We had outbreaks. We occasionally closed individual summer camps, but we didn't close all the schools at one time. And people died of infantile paralysis. They got paralyzed and/or died. This disease is a terrible disease. It's horribly contagious. It's affecting millions of Americans, but it's really not affecting the children, and they're suffering terribly by not being able to go to school. I want us to do better. I just do. I want us to do better for the kids. I want us to figure it out. I do.
Yeah,
I don't think distance learning is the solution. I think we have to do better for the kids. Even if it means staggering and having school systems where some show up from 7 to 11 and others come from 12 to 4 and maybe even some come from 4 to 7 and we squish in the academics, but for a few hours a day these kids get to be with people and we social distance them as much as we reasonably can and we require them to wear masks for a few hours a day, but at least a few hours a day with a lot of hand washing, they're with other kids. They're with their teachers,
yes.
They're with professionals. I think we can do this. If we drill down on the specifics. And I want us to.
Well, and also, I would challenge everybody to, you know, step away from traditional media sources, not talk radio, but step away from traditional media sources. Maybe watch some documentaries about the 1918 pandemic and what they had to do then and how they translated things. And just kind of get some perspective about things. That's what I try to do on the weekends, is to just kind of step away from the crowd and
yes.
Try to really read some first source stuff instead of just letting someone else tell me what it is.
Yeah. Martha Zawa, WDUN, thanks for being on the show with us today on the Lisa Wexler Show. Always good to hear from
you.
Take care down there. Take it easy.
Appreciate
All right, we'll be right
Lisa.
Back. All right, we'll
Thank
be right
you.
Back. More of the Lisa Wexler Show coming up.